Hi, I'm Kat from Avery Hill Publishing. This is a special episode of our podcast featuring an interview between the fantastic comics editor Shelley Bond and the Colorado-based artist Pidge, creator of Infinite Wheat Paste, a sci-fi epic that we're publishing the first volume of this year. The conversation between Pidge and Shelley is an absolutely fascinating deep dive into this sprawling comics universe that Pidge has been making since 2016. Infinite Wheat Paste explores interconnected stories set on the edges of human experience, and it's an ambitious, unique, and stunningly illustrated project. This chat between Pidge and Shelley has so much passion for the comics medium and gives so much background to the book. And our Kickstarter to fund this book ends on Thursday, the 11th of April, so under a week left. We need more backers to get us over the finish line, so please do check it out before then. And now enjoy this interview between Shelley and Pidge.
Pidge, I just wanted to say, I am so excited for the world to read Infinite Wheat Paste, because I only discovered you when you were kind enough to reach out and volunteer your time and your artistry for Insider Art. And since that very day, when you became a part of that collection, I feel like I've been so lucky to get to know you and get to know the magic that you bring to your personal work, which I'd like you to explain how you've been working on Infinite Wheat Paste all these years. You are a one-person operation, and now through the magic of Small Press Publishing, the rest of the world is going to get a chance to see your incredible project in a collection, as long as we reach enough people. So let's do this.
Thank you. Yeah, Avery Hill has been an awesome team, and I'm really grateful to everyone who's helped bring this into a collection. It has been my single issue series since 2016, and I really worked out a lot of the ideas in 2015, but it's something that continues to change and grow as I have a relationship with the characters and they really tell me where the story is going. And it is sci-fi and it is magic, but those are more like vehicles to tell a story about people and relationships. I think ultimately it's a story about how no one is insignificant. And I have a significant death in the first issue, and I like that it's a death that the audience doesn't have a connection with, that you see who this person was through everyone who he affects. And that we are all ultimately connected, and what one relationship can do to so many, and everything, it really does come out from that, and it's growing into a bigger story. And even the bystanders, when this character dies in the first issue, say really dismissive things, and I think it feels like when you lose someone that the world can pass you. And I think there are other parts of this story, but a big part of me wanted to say, whoever you lose, even if the world keeps moving, they're always important, even to people that meet.
Yes, that's so true. And I think it was a really brave and bold way to introduce a cast of characters and a world that is very much like our own world, and yet it's not, because of the pixie dust, the black magic, the white magic, the peculiarities. There are so many things about it that are, to me at least, hi-fi, lo-fi, very much science fiction, in the same way that I view Paul Pope's THB. And I'm not sure if that is a project that you know about or a comic that you read back in the day, but it has its own very particular world building. And so much of it is about art and science and chemistry. And so much of it is about taking all the laws of physics and putting them in a blender and shaking it then pressing mix, and then taking everything out, drinking it, and then pouring in something else that's unrelated. And that to me is the magic of comics. I think you bring your own mixture and your own method of making comics to Infinite We Paste. And before we go back to the characters in the book, because there are many, it's an ensemble cast, but what I find terrific about it is that you never feel lost. Every time you're with a character, whether it's Abby or Jeff or Abe, you know that that character has a counterpoint or a partner in crime, quote unquote. Maybe it's a former paramour, maybe it's a current conquest, but you always know that the when you meet one character, there's a significant other part of them that exists in another person. And that to me is your cohesive tissue, your connection in an ensemble cast, which is important. But something I want you to share that I think's really important to indie comics makers and indie comics readers is knowing that you've been working on this book for many years. And you do it in tandem with a day job. And the fact that you're able to write it and draw it and print it and physically assemble with staples, the works, everything, this comic to me shows how important it is to get your story out into the world. And I like people to know that because I'm one of those lucky people who knew about this series because I met you through the earlier project. I had no idea you were actually totally DIY. So just share a little bit of what that means to you and how that makes it even more of a major event that a publisher has discovered you and now is putting your book out in trade paperback form at a really reasonable price so that it can have a global outreach.
The single issues are really important to me. I love comics as an art form. I think if you love comics, you'll love Infinite Wheat Paste. I'm really sort of a cartoonist. Like I'm all about that experience. And I'm on the younger side of people who can still remember when comics were on the stand. And that tangibility and that experience, I know we've talked about this personally, is so important to me and so important to Wheat Paste. So a lot of people, when they picked up those single issues, didn't realize it was DIY because I wanted it standard size. I wanted it that saddle, staple binding.
Saddle stitched. I wanted
it trimmed perfectly. All of those elements, it's so important. I'm not as much of a music person, but when music people pick up an album and they go through the liner notes, I am that person for comics. And I think we get into the almost like the fast fashion version of comics where it gets thrown together and people don't think about how you as a reader experience it. And to me, that's so important. And Avery Hill talking to them, a big part of it was what should that experience feel like when it is in a collection? So it's been important to me to maintain that sense of direct communication with the audience.
And that's creative integrity. And that's why comics as art form is what I'm about in the 21st century. And that's what I think you and I connect, how we connect with each other. What did you change when you went from periodical to collection, if I can ask?
I think I just learned a lot about making comics through making comics. And the only way to learn how to do this is to do it. So I think going back, I had an experience with a wonderful editor named Shelley Bond who...
Oh no, not that one.
I know. Who really helped me look at how to critically and formalistically look at not just style, but story and clarity. So I went back and made some clarity choices that I just wasn't in a place to see where they didn't work when I started making this comic. And they're very, very minor changes, but I tried to make ones that were really effective in communication.
And what about color? Did you go back in and make any significant changes so that when the experience from the periodical reader, such as me, I backed the collection. So am I in for something a little different from this experience, other than I'm going to be opening a book and I'm not going to stop until I finish, because that's the kind of storyteller you are. You are the kind of storyteller that makes the reader fall into the pages and become one with the paper, essentially, which meant that when I finished an issue of the original Infinite Wheat Paste, I was angry with you because I wanted more and I didn't have any more at that moment. The good news for backers of the trade, they will actually be able to sit down for hours. They won't have to get up for days if they choose to, because there it is, the first 9 issues in one package.
Yeah, I was derelict to not mention it's in color now. It was a huge process to get it in color. Maybe I blocked that out. It was a lot of work. But I did all the flats and really cleaned up the line work, because I didn't know what I didn't know when I was on the DIY. So I really had to go through and clean the digital files with a fine tooth comb. And I made a lot of work for myself. I didn't know I was being lazy. I just didn't know how to do it yet.
It's the best way to make comics. You have to be all in, and you should just, so if you can't do it yourself, pay someone to push you off the diving board. That's what I say. So it's impressive to hear that you just went for it anyway. You might have been paying for it later. I know that you spent a lot of last year actually coloring and cleaning, as you say. So it sounds exciting.
Well, and full credit to Chase, my spouse. He went through and did the colors, and it was funny to just go through, and I had things that were very particular, and it's a very, very dense comic with a lot of the background gags. But I had a lot of things when I went back, I had forgotten how many jokes I hid in there. And I have background characters who I know go through the entire comic. So I was very particular. No, that person is in this issue too. And having to flag which ones were actually through the whole thing. And I think I'm the only person who will notice.
Oh no. Oh no. You forgot about me. I'll be looking for those Easter eggs, as we sometimes call them. Those are the very things that make comics my favorite medium, because those are the participatory extras you get on further inspection. So that's why comics like yours deserve multiple reads. Now, tell me, if you can, without spoiling too much, what would be one of your favorite visual gags that you want anyone who's smart enough to be reading this or watching this video to keep an eye out for?
I don't name this character until issue 15, but they're in there as far back as I think issue 2. The vending machine bandit is absolutely my favorite. And that just came out of when I was starting this comic, I worked a night job and I would drive home and just be tired and kind of, I live in a cold and very rural place, so it just felt desolate going home. And when I think of my version of mischief, it's always something very innocuous. And I had a very like recurring compulsive thought to unplug vending machines on my way home.
How which, evil of you.
Right. Just to like get those day people. So the vending machine bandit is someone who works long night jobs and unplugs vending machines on their way home, and there are wanted posters for them around Half Moon City. So
That's amazing. Now, talk to me a little bit about the characters because I name dropped a few of them before, but let's deep dive into the two that you think are the most important characters for potential backers to know about because you got us in with a death. So to come in on a new series with grief is sometimes daunting. You do it in such a brilliant way, though. It's like a study in characterization. So bring forward two of the characters. Give us a couple of sentences.
I think Addie really gets underestimated, but she's really the glue between a lot of those relationships. And she is the least extraordinary member of the cast, as far as she's not a goddess, she's not a witch. She's just a person navigating human beings and robots and clones and everyone with care, and not always getting it right. She's really clumsy. She calls herself out for occasionally being inconsiderate, especially of her partner. And I think she's very grounding. And Otis. I have big plans for Otis, but I think I just love his gentleness. And he's only in one issue of the nine that are collected, but I think the audience will love him in a big way. And he has not yet connected to the main cast, but he is absolutely connected to the main cast.
Ah, that's amazing. Now, something else I'm curious about. What do you mean when you say there are consequences in infinite weep paste? Because that's a word that comes up a lot in conversation.
It goes back to those relationships. I don't think anyone can have a relationship without consequence, good or bad or whatever. I think we all affect each other, and that's just such the humanness of the story. But the death in the first issue actually directly relates to where it volume three will end. Avery Hill currently has me signed on for three volumes. I have plans beyond that, but that's 30 or so issues where one thing really propels so much else. And we, as people, can't help but affect each other.
I think that you just hit the nail on the head as well, in the sense that this has always been a sprawling epic for you. To me, it's Star Wars, it's Fables or Sandman, it's evergreen. It's the kind of story that I like to read because whether I read issue one or issue four back to back or 3 months apart, I feel like you're able to write a self-contained story that tugs at heartstrings and makes me care about the characters. And yet, each time I read an issue, I would always feel like you're expanding the scope of not just the relationships and human nature, but the environment and the possibilities of future tech and magic and how those two things relate to each other and sometimes cancel each other out or negate each other. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that the tech and the magic are so incidental in some ways. And I think it's just because I make big mental leaps or big connections that are probably not there. But I think it's because I still like let my brain play and I like let myself daydream. And there's a great Neil Gaiman quote that I think about often with daydreaming and like the process of writing, which is harder for me. Like it takes more work and more time to do the visual side of a comic, but the things that I'm trying to work toward, like the difference between writers and other people is that they notice when they're having a good idea. They notice when they're daydreaming. They notice that creative process happening and they don't dismiss it. And I think we get trained to write a certain way in school or read a certain way, and we have to interpret texts similarly, and we start negating these broad leaps. So when magic and tech are there, it's really I'm making broad leaps between people more than it is broad leaps in time from what I don't think infinite wheat paste is what the future is going to look like. I think people always look the same. And a spaceship is just another cruise liner. It's another way to tell something we all understand.
Yeah, I think that's extremely profound in so many ways, because if you think about where comics are at the moment, there are so many, and there are titles that are fighting for limited attention spans and limited funds. You know, we're in the midst of a recession in some countries, and it's a pretty frightening place. You know, there's so much out there. How much of it is great stuff? And I think it goes back to what you were saying about how, as students of literature and students of the world, we've gotten to a point now where you can just click a few buttons and find out seven types of plots that Margaret Atwood recommends or has used in her stories. And what are Neil Gaiman's tips on writing a comic in his masterclass series? You can accumulate as much knowledge as you want, but the bottom line is, if you want your story to be told in the only way it can be told, which is how you're telling it yourself, you have to actually push the research aside and you have to put the pen to paper and you have to start writing and drawing, or else you will get lost from the history pages. You can't represent yourself and your ideals and your ideas in the best way possible, which is the only way it should be done is through you. So I very much appreciate your vision in this series, and how you as an artist and a cartoonist actually get the message out there. Oh, go ahead.
You have to create the story that you want to see, and you can only create the stories that are in you. And I just like stories that are complex and rich and are more like a relationship. I think when you read Infinite Wheat Paste, the longer you read it, you realize that it's a relationship between the artist and hopefully the person who reads it, not just those characters, that hopefully it's a world that you feel like you're a part of. And I just don't like one punchline kind of jokes. And I'm really grateful to you making the Sandman and the Fables comparisons. And I think about Love and Rockets often because they do go into strange places, but I don't think any of those stories you could just say it's this and it's in the title, like it's right there. There's nothing else to be explained. And there are so many things competing for attention where they just want to put what it is right in the title and not give anything else to the viewer. I can open that comic and I know what it is. I don't have to dive into that comic and build a relationship with it. I don't see that the artist has actually hidden all these things for me just because they love that place. I think a lot of people just write a one punchline joke and they move on to the next right. one.
Well, I think that's what makes sense in your title. If I'm extrapolating it correctly, infinite wheat paste means you could just paste up flyers and posters and billboards and signs and directives, and it can be a band poster, it can be a political statement, but it's layers of information that could go on top of each other. Sometimes they're ripped off, and maybe you're only seeing part of the past or the future, but it's layers of meaning and how we interpret things from yesterday, today, tomorrow, and what they mean to us as humans, as people who walk this earth for a finite amount of time. That's what I'm getting from your title. Please tell me if I've come close.
I love that. I'm going to steal it. But it's also just like that wheat paste graffiti. When I was making this comic, I was working a miserable job. I would literally feel sick on the way to work. And I had to make something that saved me. And infinite wheat paste feels like that thing. And I had a few working titles the first couple of years while I was putting things together and drawing the comic. And I settled on infinite wheat paste because I love the idea that wheat paste graffiti doesn't damage anything. And I would never want to cause any kind of harm, but it does enter public spaces. And I like the idea of that DIY. I just decided hell or high water, I was going to make this comic, whether anybody ever read it or not. And thankfully, some really cool people have, and hopefully some more awesome people will. And whether I did a terrible job pitching to Ricky, because I just told him I was Ricky from Avery Hill. I just told him I was going to make infinite wheat paste, whether anybody ever published it or not. So good. If you guys want to do something with it, if I like it, if I don't like it, I'll keep making the comic I want to make.
And you've already proved that to yourself and to the world at large. Whether your print run was 20 copies for issue one or 200 for issue 14, I mean, I think that, you know, the fact that you are making comics, no matter what, to me, is like the way we live now. Those of us who are lucky enough to live and breathe comics and feel and love them in our bones. So I'm happy about that. I'm going to ask you one more question as we wrap it up. What type of reader do you think that Infinite Wheat Paste is perfectly tailored for? And it can you can have a couple of different answers.
I think that if you love comics as an art form, a direct expression from one person to one, you are one reader, and I am one artist who does everything. If you want that feeling of direct communication, that is for you. I want you to feel my reaching out and my connection to you. I think that the characters do that to each other and to the reader. If you love comics in a way that you ferociously digest them, you take them in and you read them again, I think Infinite Wheat Paste is for you. You're so right about that tenacity to make comics at this point, that, you know, it's not in the grocery store anymore. And I think the reader has to have that tenacity to look for comics too. It's not just the people making them, I think the people who still read comics do it because they love them just as much as we do. And if you are that person, I think this comic directly reaches to you.
Since I've read all the issues you've made by hand to date, I think it's safe for me to say that Infinite Weep Paste is one of those comics that I have a few duplicates of because I've had favorite issues and I've had to send them to friends, especially friends who are in need of reading something they've never read before, that has a tenor unlike anything else and has a way of lingering. And although you start off your story with death and there's grief, this comic has so much raw hope and beauty in it that I can't imagine anyone who reads this not being in love with it, but desperate to read the next volume after they get the first 9 issues in one beautiful package that's so reasonably priced with so many special extras if they're interested in getting a poster or a beautiful tote bag that you actually, I believe, you're hand screen printing.
Yes.
Incredible. So thank you for letting me ramble with you today, Pidge. I can't imagine people not being super interested in the series, just hearing straight from the creator themselves.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it does start with grief, but it's all about life cycles. That death comes with so much new life in the form of Abe. And Otis is so important to that life cycle. I can't wait for people to read it.